Hey, Dylan Kelly here, host of the Wave Break podcast. Excited to get into this episode, but first, here's a quick word from our sponsor. This episode of the Wave Break podcast is brought to you by Klaviyo, the growth marketing platform most recommended by other business leaders. Listen, in uncertain times, you need to be supporting your community and growing relationships with your customers. It's going to be appreciated. It's going to be remembered. It's going to be shared. And in good times and bad, this type of communication that's open and empathetic with your customers is key. This is a key theme that we've been talking about at Wavebreak. I've been preaching this on the podcast. And when you're communicating with your customers in this way, the best way to do this is with email. It is and always will be one of the best channels for delivering communication like this. And what I love about Klaviyo is that email is one of its core offerings. And their personalization that you can do inside Klaviyo is just, it can't be beat. And when you leverage that personalization driven by a 360 degree view of the customer, these emails are going to feel more relevant and they're going to drive even stronger relationships. And Klaviyo gets it. They're not just, you know, some company. They understand how challenging it is right now for every entrepreneur. You know, it was hard to get your business off the ground, and navigating these times is even harder. And if you're feeling overwhelmed with growing your business, know that you're not alone. Klaviyo is here to help you build relationships across any distance for your brand and create memorable and meaningful email marketing moments that last a lifetime. And that's how you build a successful e-commerce brand. And this is why I love Klaviyo so much, because they're on the same page with me and Wavebreak. Is like, we're not just about making more revenue. That's great. But what this is really about is an opportunity to create an amazing community with your customers. And the best way to do it is with email. And if you're not on Klaviyo, you gotta get on Klaviyo. Visit klaviyo.com to schedule a free trial. That's KLAVIYO.com. Welcome back to another episode of the Wavebreak podcast. Today on the show, I'm joined by Ryan Bartlett, where he talks about scaling True Classic to over $150 million per year in 3 years. To reach that revenue and beyond, you need to be best in class across your entire business, including email and SMS. That's where Wavebreak comes in. As your email and SMS agency partner, we help you unlock more revenue from your existing customers with innovative email and SMS marketing. Recently, we helped Nutrafol increase their email and SMS revenue by over 300% in less than 90 days. To learn how much you might be leaving on the table and how we can help, visit wavebreak.co and schedule an intro call. Link is down in the show notes below. Like I said, today on the show, Ryan Bartlett joins the Wavebreak podcast, CEO of True Classic, and we're chatting about their rapid growth to $150 million per year in revenue in just 3 years. In this episode, it's a must listen. You're going to learn the meta marketing strategy that scaled the brand from $0 to 9 figures in revenue that is still working today. Ryan breaks it all down. We chat about international expansion and how that led to a 30% increase in revenue, even in the 9-figure range. And we also talk about the 5 retail stores that True Classic has launched recently, the impact, how they started the stores, the thought process behind it, and how you can do the same. So much covered in this episode. That's just a quick teaser. Make sure you listen to the entire thing. Let's jump right into it. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Ryan.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited. So True Classic, that was one of those brands that wasn't on my radar initially, probably because like it didn't exist till 2019. But since it's come on my radar, it's a brand that I see everywhere. So I'm really excited to chat today, learn more about the story, and then talk about your plans for scale and, you know, everything in between. So why don't we start there? We'll just touch quickly on like founding story, what made you start True Classic, get into the fashion business and all that. We'll start there and we'll go from there.
Yeah. So I was originally in the digital marketing business for about a decade. And I helped build a lot of people's companies. So I had really good framework built into launching an e-commerce product prior to doing True Classic. So I knew I wanted to get in the e-com space eventually. And then this t-shirt thing happened very organically, where I just noticed a giant white space in the market. And I just felt like guys were being completely underserved and sort of neglected in the apparel space in terms of the intentionality of the fit. And also just, you know, I felt like pricing for premium t-shirts was out of control. I really was tired of paying like $40 to $50 for a single t-shirt for like the really good quality ones. So I just thought there's got to be a market for the guy who wants this to fit more for their body, but also doesn't want to overpay for premium. And that's really, it was as simple as that. And I really just wanted to originally do two SKUs, just one black, one white shirt, and just be kind of the leader in that space. And then prior to launching it, I needed to bring on partners because it was just way too much work for me. So I called my buddy Matt and I asked him, like, who do you know in apparel? And he knew this guy named Nick, who became one of my co-founders, and he had sold his apparel company. So he was really the perfect guy to come in and help me on the manufacturing side, really bring my vision to life on what the product should look like and feel like. And we were just able to really, you know, hit the ground running because, you know, the three of us, even though we started this company, it was, we had already put in the work leading up to this. You know, some people always look and see how big the company got so fast, but what they didn't see was the 10,000 hours that we had put in previously. So, you know, it was really great to just have two other guys that were experts in their field. Matt was more on the finance and kind of M&A and startup world. And so between, you know, me and the digital marketing creative, Matt on the finance and Nick in the apparel, it was just the right DNA for us to really get this thing ramped up. So that was kind of the very short, early version of True Classic.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then what year was that? Was that because the brand launched in 2019? So were you guys thinking up in like before that or?
Well, I had known Matt for a long time. He was a longtime family friend. I'm best friends with one of his older brothers, and so I had known about Matt for a while, and I'd been working with Matt on a couple other small projects. He has a solar company that he was having me do lead gen for through my agency. So we were working together and things were going well. And I liked working with him. And he's been a huge asset for this company now.
And then, you were at an agency, were you running your own agency?
Yeah, it was a digital marketing agency, but it was really heavily focused on SEO and SEM. So we were also running a lot of paid media for our clients. So that's where I really, you know, cut my teeth on Facebook ads, which really helped us out in the beginning because I pretty much just put all the money to work on Facebook. Turns out 3.5 years later, it's still the best place to put your money. And we have tested every initiative under the sun. Not only have we tested everything, we have probably the strongest attribution software and incrementality testing that exists in the world. And it all comes back to Facebook. Every single dollar we spent end up coming back to Facebook some way, somehow. It's just, you cannot escape how amazing their platform is for targeting. It just, there's just no way around it, you know? So we're still spending a lot on other things. We're spending a lot on TikTok, spending a lot on YouTube, spending a lot on Google, spending a lot on Amazon ads, you know, branded and non-branded. But Facebook, man, we are still living in a Facebook world. And there's just, as much as we want to diversify, it's like you just can't, because you got to put your dollars to work for you. If you want to do performance marketing well and you want to ramp up to unbelievable volumes like us, you've got to put the money to work for you in the best possible spot. It's one of the biggest misses that brands have, is they're just spraying money into the ether and not doing a great job of measuring it. And that's why you have so much waste happening. You know, like I see, like I get hit up by the NFL and the MLB and the NBA for advertising. And I look at their packages and I'm like, you guys have no clue what's happening around you. Like, you guys are trying to get me to pay millions of dollars to put a, you know, 8x3 banner in the middle of the arena, way up in the top row. And you think that that's going to do anything for me? You think I'm going to be able to quantify the results of that? They're just out of their mind, these guys, these companies trying to advertise with us. You know, it's just the new school will eventually come in and show them how to do it. But man, these old guys, these old legacy advertiser guys just do not get it. They don't understand my world at all.
Yeah, totally. And definitely want to talk about that because, so you started the brand in 2019. I think in 2020, I saw in like Retail Brew or something, it's like the brand grew 6,500%.
Yeah.
And so is this just like,
off the back of, you know, now it's, I guess, Meta, but like off the back of Facebook ads. And just from there, you mentioned you tested other channels, like everyone's talking about TikTok and TV and streaming and, you know, all these other channels. But for the most part, you're still extremely bullish on Facebook.
Yeah. I mean, we just, man, it all goes back to, you know, where does your customer live ultimately? Listen, we spend most of our money with Facebook, but we also understand, like, my dad, who is much older, really gets a lot of his ads through YouTube, right? That older generation is not on Instagram. They're not really on like social media like that or TikTok. But they are on YouTube. So you do have to take into account that if your demo is, you know, anywhere in the 50 plus range, that a lot of those guys are still on YouTube and they're watching a lot of videos and they're going to see a lot of ads there. So whenever I get an old guy that says, "Hey, I know True Classic," I always say, "Did you find us on YouTube?" And they say, "Yes, 100% of the time." They never have said TikTok, by the way, surprisingly. So yes, you have to spend there. You just don't have to put the bulk of your spend there. That's really what it comes down to. So yes, you need to spend on linear and streaming TV and OTT. Yes, you need to spend on TikTok, but it doesn't need to make up the majority of your spend. You really need to put the bulk of it into Facebook and IG and let it work for you. And then the rest of it, like if I had to put a number on it, I would say it probably makes sense to put 75% of your budget on Facebook, Instagram. And then, you know, the rest of that 25 is split between, I would say, TikTok being number one, and then YouTube. Sorry, let me go back. Facebook first, and then I would say Google is probably in there, sandwiched in between TikTok, because it's kind of a different platform. As you know, it's very customer intent there is much different. They're there ready to buy. I would say Google, TikTok, and then streaming and podcasting is probably the only other channel that I think is really worth spending on. But again, you have to really, really hone in on how you're tracking these. Even with podcasting, it's one of those weird things where someone is just talking into your ears and you're not buying right away. It's kind of a longer sales cycle. So you have to take that into account. And we're spending a good bit on it, but the bulk of it goes to where we can really hone in on the attribution and make sure that, and we do like regression analysis and all that stuff. And it ends up all going back to Facebook. So that's where you got to put the majority.
Yeah. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. I think like everybody's looking for that next channel because it's like, they just want it to be easy and they want it to like rip like it was, or like they don't want, I don't know, they're just always chasing that shiny object. Facebook. So like, how are you approaching Facebook these days? Like a lot has changed in the last 2 years. Like, what is it tactically on like a monthly basis? Like, are you testing a bunch of creatives and like launching a bunch of new creatives, or like
so much, dude, that look like? We have like three agencies that we're using for creative. It's so insane. And on top of that, by the way, we have our own in-house team. So we do our own in-house creative. We have Tube Science, Narrative, 99 ads. We have, it's unreal how many agencies we have do content. We have Greg Tube, who does other content for us, which are the two guys out of Philly that do a lot of ads for us. So we have, in my opinion, too many ads. I think what we need to do a better job of is focusing on making the best stuff for the customer and less on volume and just more on quality. That's really what I'm after. But when you're spending at the levels we're spending, you are burning through creative so much faster than you realize. So, that's really the game though. Ultimately it comes down to creative. Like a lot of people I talk to are just like, I cannot get Facebook to work. And then I look at their ads and I'm like, buddy, it ain't Facebook. It's like your garbage ad that you created in a day and a half is just not going to resonate with the customer. So you need to go back to the drawing board and figure out what your customer actually wants to see, create something important for them, something valuable, and then you can measure it and see if it works. But I can tell you it works. It works really well. And by the way, everyone we talk to that's at like the higher echelon of volume says the exact same thing. It's not like it's just us saying this. This is everybody. Everyone knows that Facebook's the game. They all know that creative is the game. And the more time and energy you put into it, the better it's going to perform. You know, we have it's similar to the model that Tube Science puts out, which is they reiterate and reiterate and reiterate. So they test, you know, it's all about the hook rate, the thumb stop. It's all about those first 3 seconds. How do you make it better? And then how do you create new iterations off of that better iteration and just kind of keep going in that model forever? So that's what we do. You know, we spend on it. We see what does really well. We take what does really well, and then we do mashups of it. And we take like all our best creative and essentially mash it up into like one big video. And that seems to crush for us. And then we take those mashups and we run those on YouTube as well. And they do really well there. But YouTube's a completely different animal. We've been making a lot of more long form content for YouTube, you know, like the 2 minute ads, the 3 minute ads. So that is a completely different world. And you have to think a bit larger and more expensive when you're doing creative that long. But yeah, to answer your question, it all comes down to the creative. It's just like, people get in their head about what they think creative is supposed to look like because they see what everyone else is doing. And that's the problem.
Agency portfolios, or it's just like, yeah, it just looks aesthetically pleasing.
It adds no value. And everyone just thinks because they can see it in the market that that's actually working. And the reality is it's just not. It's very average. It's, you know, below average as far as like working for people, but it's just mostly what people see. And so then they go, okay, well, maybe I'll try comedy. And comedy is really hard, and people try to do it and it falls so flat and it's so cringeworthy, and you watch it and you're just like, oh my God, it's brutal, dude. But
knockoff Dollar Shave Club ad.
Yes, dude. And everyone tries to like copy the Dr. Squatches of the world. And even us, like I see people trying to put their own Greg tubes together, and it's really hard. And people just don't realize it until they start doing it and spending on it and seeing that, you know, it doesn't net out the way they thought it would.
Yeah. And then like, how do you actually test? Like you're launching like X number of creatives a week, and then like you're spending X budget on those ads, and then whatever works, you just scale up.
Exactly. So we have like a testing campaign. And so anything new comes through that testing campaign. If it does well, then it goes into our kind of winner campaigns, and then we scale up from there. But kind of exactly like you said, there's like an initial test run to see how it does. If it does well, we put it over here and then ramp it up.
And then are you trying to create like wide creative, like thinking like, you know, we want like 100 million guys to resonate with this ad? Or how do you think about like the actual, outside of like hook rates and like, you know, best practices there, like how do you think of like the actual creative strategy?
I mean, there's only a couple, right? Like you can either create the cool guy ads, which are like lifestyles where it's like the guy like walking down the beach kind of ad, right? Like there's that. Yeah. And we still have to do some of that. Like that you as an apparel brand, you always have to create that kind of stuff, but it doesn't have to be a large percentage. And I try to get away from a lot of that because it does sell the product well, but I'm all about value. And if the ad doesn't bring tremendous value, I really don't want to even do it. But I do I do recognize that there are people that resonate with that kind of ad. So it's either that type of ad. It's the UGC guy where he's like, you know, I just got these in the mail, and here and they got their phone and they're like talking to like, so there's those that do really well as well. And it only does well if they're really authentic too. I've noticed that any of the ones that we've tried to run where it was like clearly an actor, like people just see right through it. And you really need real people to like put on your shirt and give you an honest, you know, recommendation on the product. So we've gotten away from hiring actors and just really getting real people to review us, which has worked really well for us. So you have, you know, the lifestyle, you have the UGC. And then it's, you know, you can do some kind of instructional videos, but that doesn't really do that well for us.
I'm looking at one right comedy. Now, how to hide a gut. That's the headline on the creative.
And we're trying to get away from that because so much of our audience are not dad bods, even though that is what has really resonated with a lot of people. The dad bod thing just took off because so many guys fit into that demo and the shirt was so impactful for them that it just kind of like ate up a lot of the voice that came out of this. But I mean, I'm a skinny guy. Most of the guys I know are skinny guys and we all, you know, wear the shirts and they make us all look good too. So we're trying to actually get away from so much dad bod talk because it's just not really true. It helps really all body types kind of look better. But then to answer your question, the last one is really comedy for us. It's just like, what can we do? But that's hard because you can't really get agencies. Like none of the agencies we're working with really do comedy. Yeah. And if they did,
even watching the Super Bowl last night, you could see like when people were trying too hard.
Dude, it's so brutal. And you know what else I noticed? And I hate the big brands always do this. They always think, oh, I just got to hire the three best actors in Hollywood or whoever's popular at the moment, throw them into a random skit and boom, I have a winning creative. It's like, dude,
right.
You guys spent your money in the wrong place. Put your money to work on the writing, make it the funniest it can be. And you can throw anyone in there. No one cares who the actor is.
Right.
So it drives me nuts, dude.
Yeah.
I was watching those the same way you were. And I'm thinking like, God, these guys are so bad at what they do. Yeah. They had one job, create a great creative for Super Bowl. And this is what they came up with.
Well, then part of me, I'm like, I wonder where the client red lines were. It's like, they're like, can you make the hold music a little bit more dancey? And then they're like I'm just picturing like the Slack conversation, like can you make more dancing?
God, dude. Drives me nuts.
Yeah.
It drives me nuts.
But yeah, comedy is hard, but when it works, it works. And it's like really helps you stand out from everybody else. But it's a fine line, like you say.
It works really well when you do it well. That's the thing. If it doesn't, then it goes the other way. But man, when it works well, it's by far the best because it creates an emotional connection with customers and it makes them laugh. And what's better than making someone laugh in a world where we're all just like sick of creative and ads? If you can make an ad that makes people laugh, you are onto some magic. And that's what we're about.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then in terms of the UGC creative style that you're sourcing, you said you're not using actors anymore. Like, how are you going about finding those people? Are they customers or like,
yeah,
know, like that's then difficult because, you know, it doesn't always come out great and you are pumping out, you have 400 active creatives on Facebook right now. I'm looking. So like, how are you able to, how do you get all that UGC at scale?
So we have an in-house girl. She used to run for Manscaped. Now she runs for us and she is a killer. You know, she does massive outreach for all this stuff to a lot of our customers. And it just works. And, you know, so we have a little team in-house that does it to answer your question. And we use software, obviously. We don't like manually do outreach. You use it through kind of a platform and it just makes it so much easier. But, yeah, man, there's just nothing better than getting your customers to talk about your brand because they already love the brand. They can tell you things that influencers just wouldn't really be privy to. So it was a big shift for us, but I'm glad we made that shift and got, you know, plus everyone knows like the actors that do the UGC now. There's like 20 of them, right? And everyone uses the same 20. Yeah. it's like you're not fooling anybody with this kind of stuff. So it was just the natural progression for us.
Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense. And like, and then you're just taking it and you're like editing it in-house to make it into like the
some of it
style. Okay.
Some of it we're editing in-house. Some of it we're handing off to some of our agencies. Okay. A lot of what the agencies do for us, which is great, is they dig through our content libraries and they find stuff that is just sitting around that we could have made winners, but didn't. So they'll sift through it. And they'll put like, you know, a couple edits together. And before you know it, they come out with a winner that was just sitting in your content library. And it's pretty magical. You know, that's what you pay these guys for is to not just shoot new stuff, but to go through your old stuff and make new stuff.
I mean, I think that's huge, too. I think there's like a few camps of brands. It's like there's the brands who don't have enough creative. They need more creative. And then there's the brands who have a ton of creative, even old creative that like, they just like, you know, you do a shoot, forget about it, and then it never gets used again. So I think that's great too. Like going back, even having different agencies do it too, because you never know like what angle or approach they'll take that's different than the other agency who might have gone through it. Yeah, that's smart. And so running all these ads, like growth of the business, what does that look like at a high level from, you know, founding till now?
Yeah. So the first year we did 15 million. Second year we did 90 million. So we made a massive jump there.
And that's,
and then
2020?
Last year we did 2021. We did 90. Yeah.
90,
so
20. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And then last year we did 150. So we're hoping this year we can land around 220 to 250 is kind of what we're projecting. But we'll see. It just depends on kind of efficiency on these platforms and how much we can push, how much we can spend, how much we're getting back out of that. Depends on a lot of things. We also have a lot of initiatives that can really take us to the next level. So like international, for example, huge part of the business already. It's like 30% of revenue. We haven't even really ramped up. So 190 countries we're in, but I would say that
I was not expecting that. As the
number. but the majority of the sales come from Canada's number one, UK, Australia, Mexico, and Germany, and France. So those are really the top ones that we focus on. They bring in like 90% of the revenue internationally. And then everywhere else, it's just like, you know, spread out. But so we haven't even really optimized a lot of our creative for those locations yet. And we're just now going back and optimizing. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine, you know, showing an ad in German that's funny versus Americans doing it in English, by the way. We're sending English ads to Germany and getting that many sales. And now imagine if we start sending German ads in German. Like it's just gonna be a game changer.
Plus
across
you have
the board,
all the winning creatives already that you can just like.
We just need to change the words. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Oh, so now I'm going back and I'm thinking, should I hire German actors to like recreate our funny skits, or should I just do overdubs? I don't know. We're testing a bunch
you
of stuff.
You should test the dubs first, because that could be even funnier.
I know. And have that be part of the ad, because like, it would make it funnier, right? I thought the same thing. We'll see though. We'll see where it nets out.
You have
to
test it and see.
Yeah.
No, but, and then did you launch from day one? Did you have international on your site or?
No. It takes a long time. I think for most companies, it's like 9 months to a year to launch internationally. But since we launched with a company called Global E, they're like an accelerator and they already have everything ready to go. So you really just plug into their system and they basically own your checkout process. And then you pay them a percentage of revenue on the international orders. And it's a beautiful model for us because we move so fast and we don't want to have to hire another 15 people to manage international when we can just leverage their team and, you know, pay them a percentage. It was a game changer. I mean, we turned it on June of last year. So it's only been around for like 8 months. And overnight, it just exploded. And we're such a good product for international too. If you think about, I mean, we're basics. We're plain clothing. It's going to resonate anywhere. So it was a game changer though. And I couldn't be happier with kind of the results so far.
And do you ship from the US or you have fulfillment in these countries and it's set up?
For now, we
do.
Or? Yeah, it's not ideal.
Oh, you do ship from the US. Okay.
Yeah, it's not ideal. You know, we're, and that's part of the optimization process that I was talking about, right? Like, I mean, first it's the creative. I know it's insane that we're doing this much volume.
Yeah, you're doing more revenue than so many like D2C logos, quote unquote, in the space internationally, shipping from the US with US ads.
Dude, and we're like, and it's like costing them a fortune. So it's like
with
30
like that
bucks
and all that. Yeah.
It's insane. It's insane. So that's a big push for us, obviously, is to get some fulfillment centers over in the UK, get one in Canada, get one in Mexico, all of our big spots, basically. And then, you know, see how, or the other way we could do it is to potentially just open up international on Amazon and let that be our fulfillment, you know, just ship directly and let let them ship through their warehouses. So we're in the process of figuring that out. So we're kind of in the middle of it right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's insane, though. Like, just turning it on and then adding that much revenue is...
Dude, we thought it was going to be... We thought it was going to be like 7%.
I'm just cracking up. That's amazing.
So that's what's crazy is that we had bets going. We thought, we're like, oh, international will add a good 7 or 8%. That'll be amazing for the business. 7 or 8%. We were so happy with 7 or 8%. And then overnight it was 30 and we like, our minds were blown. We just didn't even know what to make of it. And then all of a sudden, everything changed in the business overnight. The, you know, the projections changed, the forecasting changed. It just became a monster business like overnight. So we started scrambling to try to figure it out. But it was pretty eye-opening, you know. We just didn't know, you know, just like when I started this thing, we didn't know. We just thought it's gonna be a side project, you know, we'll see if anyone likes it, you know.
Were you still running the agency when you launched?
Yeah, I still own it today. I don't run it. I hired a CEO to run it and she does a tremendous job. But I don't really, I'm not in it at all. I'm completely focused on True Classic at this point.
And so you started this as a side project and then it grew like crazy. And then is the business funded or how did you finance all of the growth? Like from growing 6,500% in a year and crazy.
It's completely like bootstrapped. I mean, we invested like $3,000 to start it. And that money went into the first buy order for our shirts. And it also went into Facebook ads. So I took that $3,000 and I basically put like 80% of it into the clothing and I put the other 20 into Facebook. And, just the money that was coming out of Facebook, I just kept putting back into the ads. So I just kept rolling the money over. You know, I was getting like, you know, 3 or 4 to 1 on my money. So I just kept pushing it back and pushing it and just upping the budgets and reinvesting the profits. And that's what kept it going because we didn't need to take any money out. You know, the three of us already had, you know, some success in our lives at that point. So we didn't need to take any money out, take paychecks. We didn't need a big staff. We could do the work of 15 people between the three of us. So we didn't need to go in debt. We just wanted to be scrappy, bleed out our eyes for a while until we hired people. And that's how we wanted to run it. We didn't want to, you know, raise money and go in debt, be beholden to some, you know, PE firm. And So that's not to say we won't raise money in the future for some of our larger initiatives. Like we're thinking we may have to raise because we want to roll out retail at a much higher level where we have like 5 stores right now. I think we want to get to like 100 stores over the next couple of years. So we would definitely need some capital for that. That's pretty capital intensive. All bootstrapped.
That's crazy. And then I love how it started with just the side project and then $3,000 and just going.
It's insane. But listen, if you don't put that money into Facebook, it is not $3,000. That's my point is that like, if you put that money everywhere else, it probably turns into like $50,000 very quickly, you know, maybe $100,000 before you start to see results. But the fact that you were putting money essentially to work for you, it was just the perfect place. And I already knew that coming into it. I was like, I already know where to put the money, guys. So we don't need to guess on advertising. Like, I'm just going to put it here. We're going to get a return. We're going to roll it over and just keep that process going over and over and over again. So, you know, thankfully I had that experience under my belt. It just gave me such an advantage starting out to not have to go into debt.
Yeah. Do you think that would still, like, if you're starting a brand today, like, do you think it's still a good time to start a brand? Would you still just double down on Facebook in the beginning? Or like, how would you approach that?
I still would do it the same way. The difference nowadays from when we started is this was pre-iOS 14. So it definitely helped to have a little bit more targeting data. But since our brand is so broad anyway, the TAM is so large that we're able to target men and women. You know, we're able to target, women are 30% of our revenue, by the way. 30 to 40%,
or you sell women's products as well.
Yeah, no, we don't sell women's products yet. Oh, wow. But the, you know, a lot of married women buy for their husbands, buy all their clothing, not just like a shirt or two, like everything. So, and what do you think is compelling to a woman when they see an ad that says, "Here's how you make your guy look better"? They're like, hide dude, that they're gut. All in. Dude, they're
DMing it to five friends. Oh,
they love it because it's a win-win because the guy looks better. He feels better about himself. And then the girl gets a guy that looks better. It's just like, for what? The cost of a t-shirt? So it's a win-win across the board. And actually, women become the majority of our buyers during gifting seasons. So like Q4, they become like 60% of revenue. So it overtakes men.
It makes a lot of sense. But it's not something that, like, going into it, I feel like you think about.
Not at all.
Something else I want to touch on before we start to run out of time is retail. So you're launching into retail. You mentioned you have five stores. When did you launch store one? And what does your expansion of retail look like?
We had another very similar situation that we did with Global E, where we found a retail accelerator. And we were able to basically leverage their entire team to do the build out, the design, the staffing, and handle basically all the OPEX. So that was amazing for us. So we literally launched our first store 2 months after talking to this company, which is just unheard of. You just can't get a store up that quickly. It usually takes like 9 to 12 months to get a store up because you have to negotiate the lease and you have to build it out and you have to staff it. And it's a nightmare. So, but they already have the leases in place. So they can basically just kind of like put you where you fit, essentially. And so it just saved so much time and energy. So we launched a couple in November. I think we launched our first two in November, one in December, and then two in January. So we launched, you know, all five here in just a couple months, which is insane. Oh, wow. And would never be able to happen if it wasn't for the company we use. So, we had two guys on our executive team who one of them worked at Fabletics and one of them worked at Victoria's Secrets and Savage Fenty. So they opened a ton of stores. And even them, they were like, this is like unheard of, like how fast we're doing this. It's so, so true classic like of us to do it this quickly. But
yeah, I mean, that's crazy. So, and then five stores in that span too, like, is there a reason that it wasn't just like, oh, let's just test one and see how it goes. You're like, let's launch five and see what happens. Cause I even see like two, looks like two are both in Chicago.
Yeah.
As well. So it's like same place. So yeah, I would love to learn about that approach too, to launching multiple stores and why you launch them in certain places.
Yeah. So the idea is that you're just not going to get a good read on one store. You know, if a store doesn't do well, it could be foot traffic, it could be location, it could be a lot. It could be the way the store is kind of set up. It could be a lot of things. So by doing five, it gives us a more broad data set to work with. And then to go back and say, okay, does this really even work for us? You know, this kind of acquisition strategy, which is kind of part of it, which is getting people in the store, creating a great experience and bringing a lot of new eyeballs to True Classic. So, we were just like, let's just settle on five. We kind of just made an agreement that we were going to do five. And just kind of an arbitrary number. And the team agreed that, like, you know, given the amount of staff we have here and that we're leveraging on their side, it was pretty much all we could handle was five at a time. Plus, we didn't, like, if they were losing too much money, we didn't want to be so underwater that it was like really hurting the business. So we're like, five is no big deal. Cause even if they're all losing, it's still like such a small amount of money in the big scheme of things compared to how much revenue we're doing, that we wouldn't really feel it. But to answer your question on location, it came down really to density and just like where we have the highest concentration of customers. And so we really just built it out on that. Like where's the density the highest and where is that radius and where does it fit? And between what this other company, Leap, offered and where our customer density was, it was kind of a guessing game between the two of those on where we should go. And then we also have like some of them are in a standalone building. Some of them are inside of a mall. So like, which is going to work better? And so we tried to really differentiate all of them to be able to kind of maximize the data points. But, you know, even if you guess the location and you have a lot of good customers there, it doesn't mean the store is going to work. So, you know, we're still learning, man. It's so early and we are babies in retail. Yeah. So we'll see. I don't know where it's going to go yet, but so far so good.
Yeah, I mean, I found, I said before, like, I found the Tyson's Corner location interesting. It's like, you know, typically like the quote unquote D2C brands are like, you know, we got to be in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, or we got to be in Soho or wherever, you know, is like hot and cool,
Yeah.
or like the equivalent. And then you guys are like Tyson's Corner. And I feel like that location is just going to rip, you know?
Dude, that's our best location.
I figured I'm from like outside. I'm not close to it, but like my family growing up, you know, you get in there. There was like not a mall where I lived that was good. So
Yeah.
you'd get in there and you'd drive like 2 hours there from where I grew up. But yeah, I had a feeling. Any insights
Yeah.
coming in from retail so far? Like anything surprising or curious, like initial retail learnings?
I would say that it's a lot more work than I realized. I thought that if you build it, they will come type vibe. But I think what I'm realizing is it takes a lot more work to come up with a strategy to get people in the store. So I'm devising some strategies that I think will help that a lot. I think I can come up with some pretty creative ways to get people in there and offer them some really good incentives. And by that, I really just mean people that are already in the mall walking by, because you can only like email your customer so many times to be like, hey, we got a store, we got a store, we got a store.
Right.
Like, you know, so to me, it's like, okay, how do you take advantage of the people walking by? So I have this idea that I'm going to roll out and where I'm going to make like a game, like a classic game. Think of like,
What game? Tell me the
you're
game.
not going to remember this game, but like in the 80s, they had this game called, it was like the 70s and 80s. It was called Press Your Luck.
Okay.
And with the whammies, have you heard of that game? Do you know what that
I've heard of
is?
it, yes.
You're like Googling it right now. My
Wait, let me
generation
Google
knows that because I'm 40. I'm 40. So I'm an old guy. So it's that was a really popular game. So you know, it could be like Wheel of Fortune, or it could be like the Plinko, or what do they call it from Price is Right, where the thing goes through the little anyway, I'm gonna have a
Yeah, the
game
spinner.
show and I'm gonna build out a fucking game show in the store somewhere. And I'm gonna like really make it exciting to want to come in and play this game and win something. You're either gonna win cash or percentage off or whatever. So I'm gonna try to create a real experience and get people interested and just give them a little bit more value than the rest of the stores around there are giving. Be a little bit more thoughtful. And that's really, you know, the thesis of everything True Classic is just outthinking our competitors, going faster, better, more creative. And that's the differentiator. Once you get to our scale, it's like you just have to be thinking on a different level than everyone around you, or you'll just become average, you know, like
Yeah.
most companies.
Yeah. And
So.
like, you know, the next mall brand or the next D2C brand that like, you know, has its moment and then just like fades away. I feel like that's overlooked too, is it's like you have to keep reinventing yourself as a brand to be successful. Like so many of the brands that are still successful today, like you even think of a company like Nike, if they were still running their original thesis, it wouldn't
Yeah.
be, you know, they would honestly
Right.
be out of business.
You're right. And if you go back and look at like slogans, like if you Google like Levi's is a great example. Like I feel like we're kind of like the modern day Levi's now. But if you go back and look at how many slogans Levi's has crafted over like the last 50, 60 years, it's like 300. It's like
Wow.
an insane amount of slogans. And I didn't even realize. And I going back, I'm like, oh, they just changed it like every month. You know, like it just like whatever campaign that they were working on that month or quarter, they just rebranded their slogan. And it was like, okay, so that's how you do it. You just keep coming up with
Yeah.
new things all the time. And, you know, as long as it relates back to kind of your core principles as a brand, I think you can have that flexibility of trying new slogans and things like that.
Yeah, Levi's is a crazy one. Like you'll look up, you'll be like, "Oh, I want to do something really cool in apparel." And then it's like, "Well, Levi's actually has the patent on that dating back to like 1857 or whatever." And you're
Exactly,
like,
dude.
"Oh, man. Well, hey, it's been great having you on the show. I want to close out like 2023. There's a lot of like, you know, it feels like a different year than last year. A lot of people started last year strong and then, you know, for whatever reason, not figuring out creative or just like, you know, not evolving the brand like we're talking about now. It's like they didn't see as good performance. You know, there's a lot of talk in the news that's negative. I like talking with you because it's like so refreshing to hear someone who's like, yeah, you know, we're excited about launching new stores. We're excited about continuing to grow the brand. How are you approaching 2023 this year?
Man, that's such a big question. I mean, we are just thinking of maximizing our areas where we have not done a great job yet. So like I said originally, all the efforts around international are huge for the business. Like just really optimizing everything is absolutely huge. So that's one. Amazon, we think, is going to be somewhere between 20, 30 million this year, hopefully. You know, we're projected 15, but I think we can overachieve on that. So those two are probably our two of our bigger initiatives. We're also potentially rolling out a women's line this year, which, you know, if you know anything about spending habits, women make up like 80% of the spending in the country. So there's a huge opportunity for us to come out with a shirt for women that solves an issue or a problematic area, just like the, you know, the men's shirt does for men. We're trying to come out with a version of that for women. And we just think it's going to be huge. So I'm just really excited to see what that looks like. And we're going to test it on the market and see how it does. If people love it, then we'll roll it out and start ramping it up. But so, you know, international, Amazon, product expansion, those are really the three pillars that I'm looking at for 2023. And, you know, just trying to kill it, man.
Yeah. Still being aggressive.
Absolutely. I mean, we're more aggressive now than we ever have been on spend. We are really ramping up to new levels that we just previously haven't really tested in these kind of months, especially early on. I mean, Q1 is supposed to be pretty soft for most companies, but we are just looking at it as an opportunity while CPMs are still kind of low to land grab and just take advantage of the low cost traffic and acquire as many customers as we can.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, it's been great chatting. I love the different, I don't know, it's like a real, really refreshing take, not just, you know, of 2023, but even just like the speed. I feel like a lot of people listening are going to be like, you know, have their brains broken a little bit, whether it's, you know, talking about how fast you're opening retail stores or how fast you've pushed and grown the business or like what's actually working or testing with advertising today. It's been really great having you on. We'll have to figure out, we'll have to get you back on the show once you have your 100 retail stores and we'll talk about the game show, how it's going, and everything in between, but really appreciate you taking the time. Where can people go to find True Classic, learn more about you, get connected, all that?
Yeah. TrueClassic.com. You know, we have a lot of new products. We have a lot more than t-shirts. We have denim, we have underwear, we have socks, we have hats, we have sportswear, you know, activewear. We have polos, we have dress shirts, we have, I mean, we're coming out with a blazer this year. I mean, we're really trying to do absolutely everything and make sure that whatever products we put out are best in class quality and fit. And then we're giving you a really fair price. That's something accessible for everybody. So yeah, trueclassic.com. Check us out.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks again for coming on. We'll link that up down in the show notes below. So go check it out. Thanks again.
Awesome, man. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Wavebreak Podcast. If you're not subscribed on iTunes or Spotify, go hit that subscribe button so you don't miss out on future episodes. And if you're not on our email list, go sign up at wavebreak.co/join. You'll join other e-commerce leaders at brands like Skims, Cartier, and Walmart, and thousands more, learning exactly what's working in e-commerce right now. You won't want to miss it. Sign up at wavebreak.co/join. It's free. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Wavebreak Podcast. I hope you have a wonderful day.